You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Very good Wednesday morning to you. Mike McNamara for Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network, on a day that the nation will lay its 41st president to rest. And you know, when you look at the life of George Bush, I don't know that does any other president compare to him relative to public service? Eisenhower, right? John Kennedy, life of public service. Pretty short list, though. So, let me tell you what we're going to do today. You're going to hear a battlefield study that I repeat, one of my favorites, actually. It is Jack Riley. So we'll do that starting at about 8 o'clock Pacific time. So I can watch the funeral. Yeah, sorry about that. It is a federal holiday, after all. And I would encourage you to do the same thing. He was a remarkable man. And when the nation rolls out its pageantry, I can remember probably the first memory of my mom. One of the first is watching, coming home from kindergarten, and John Kennedy's funeral was on, and she was crying, and I don't think I'd ever seen my mom cry before. And so what stuck out for me wasn't so much the funeral, though we had a kind of rectangular pine box TV, and it stood on its short end. Right, so it had the knobs and stuff underneath the tube, and it was black and white, and we were sitting on the couch in our family room, and she had a box of Kleenex in front of her. The other thing I remember her is I had a heart issue when I was when I was a little kid, and I had a heart murmur, and they ran a tube. They did a heart catheterization on me. So they ran tubes from my left forearm and right, I guess at the hinge of your hip and your groin area. They went through there because I have a scar there. And I remember building models with my mom. She would come into the hospital in her dress, and she would sit down, and they'd let me build models in my hospital room. So, anyway, I've always been a fan of history. I think anybody who listens to the program knows. And so I would encourage you to, whether you watch on your phone or whether you watch on network TV, and obviously everybody will cover this event today. But it's a piece of American history. And, you know, you look at the soldiers, the sailors, the airmen, and the Marines that will adorn the nation's capital. And what an awesome experience, you know, for your son or your daughter to be a witness and a piece of history as the nation rolls out its ceremonial honors for the 41st president, a special president, a veteran of, I want to say, 58 combat missions in the Pacific. I still don't understand. How the hell did he sign up to be a naval aviator at the age of 18? Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Commandant of the Marine Corps, and the Joint Chiefs all assemble as the body of President Bush comes to the Capitol. So I've always been a fan of it. It's kind of interesting some of the things that you see written as well. But the thing I wanted to say about George Bush the Elder, I don't like calling him 41. I don't know. To me, that seems. And I know the family uses it and whatnot. But he grew up, you know, in a life of privilege. At the age of 18, he did not have to go serve. You know, but he did. So, I mean, to me, it says a lot about a young man, you know. And so when you look at his service in the Navy and his wartime record, it's pretty amazing, you know. And I'd be curious about the footnotes of how does somebody so young, how did he get into the naval aviator pipeline? Did they say, look, all you got to do is pass the aptitude test? So I'm curious. So he's born. He's born in 1924. Family moves to Connecticut. He begins his formal education at Greenwich Country Day School. Then he goes to Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts. Holds a number of leadership positions, including president of the senior class, secretary of the student council, president of the community fundraising group, and a member of the editorial board of the school newspaper, captain of the varsity baseball and soccer teams. What? We didn't play soccer back then. Holy smokes. United States enters World War II in December of 1941. that anniversary will be in 2 days. 6 months later, right, he enlists in the Navy immediately after graduating from high school. So that would have been in May, June of 1942. You know something? How do you know you raised your kid right? Now, I wondered about this yesterday. I thought, you know what, if I was stationed in Quantico, as my son is, and I had the day off, which it's a federal holiday today, well, I would without a doubt go there to watch. And I thought, I wonder if my son will. So on my phone, just a second ago, I got a picture entitled 43 and his wife going to the Capitol. You know something? And you don't think they pay attention. Yeah, and so, no. My number one son, attending, which... means that his mother and I did something right. No, I just think it's, I think it's cool. I think it's cool. I remember we were given the day off when the unknown from the Vietnam War was interred at Arlington. That person, I wish I could remember his name, has since been identified. But, President Reagan spoke at Arlington. We couldn't get in or get near, obviously, where he was speaking. But, you know, we were in our uniforms as second lieutenant and watched as the nation rolled out its pageantry. Again, I was excited to go. And then, but, you know, it was very cool. My friends were, you know, wanted to go too and see it. And I saw pictures of us at Arlington that day. And so how do you know you raised your kids right? Anyway, the one that can is, so very nice. The, I actually thought about that yesterday. I said, you know, Johnny's not a, he's not a history guy like I am, and I'm sure he's got work to do and blah, 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 blah. Nice. John Stock just went up in my book. Not that it needed to go up, mind you, but. It just did. Anyway, he enlists in the Navy in June of 1942. He becomes a naval aviator taking training for aircraft carrier operations aboard the USS Sable. He completes 10 months training. He's commissioned an ensign in the Naval Reserve at Corpus Christi. So in June of 1943... just prior to his 19th birthday, he is a naval aviator. At that time, he goes to Torpedo Squadron 51, VT-51, as the photographic officer. The following year, his squadron is based on the USS San Jacinto as a member of Air Group 51, where his lanky physique earned him the nickname Skin. During that time, the task force was victorious in one of the largest air battles of World War II, the Battle of the Philippine Sea. After Bush's promotion to Lieutenant J.G. on August 1, 1944, the San Jacinto commenced operations against the Japanese in the Bonin Islands. Bush piloted one of four Grumman TPM Avengers of VT-51 that attacked the Japanese installation on Chichijima. And then it goes into the mission over Chichijima that he was shot down on. He waited 4 hours in the inflated raft while several fighters circled protectively overhead until he was rescued by the USS Finback. For the next month, he remains on the Finback. and participated in the rescue of other aviators. Several of those shot down during the attack were executed, and their livers were eaten by their captors. Yikes. The experience shaped Bush profoundly, leading him to ask, why had I been spared, and what did God have for me? In November of 1944, Bush returned to the San Jacinto, participated in operations in the Philippines until a squadron was replaced and sent home to the United States. Through 1944, he flew 58 combat missions, received the Distinguished Flying Cross, 3 Air Medals, and the Presidential Unit Citation awarded to the San Jacinto. He was then assigned to a training wing for torpedo bomber crews at the Norfolk Naval Air Base. His final assignment was to a new torpedo squadron, VT-153, based at Naval Air Station Gros Isle, Michigan. He was honorably discharged from the Navy in September of 1945, 1 month after the surrender. I still don't get, though, when you look at his military career, I still don't get how was he able to become a naval aviator at the age of 18? How was he even accepted? Were there no requirements? I don't recall seeing like Army Air Force pilots, you know, at the age of 20 piloting bombers over. Maybe there were. So to me, it's one of the things that I think is coolest about President Bush is he didn't have to do that. Right? I mean, his father was, Prescott Bush, man. He was not, he was, that's a big time dude, man, at the time. And so, he did not have to. He could have done what other rich kids did. And that was, and that certainly wasn't go to war. And certainly, if you went to war, it wasn't piloting an airplane. It wasn't piloting an airplane fighting it against the Japanese. And again, if you look at the biography of his father, he certainly could have intervened. An American banker and politician, after working on Wall Street as an executive investment banker, he represented Connecticut in the United States Senate from 1952 to 1963. So that's 2 terms. A member of the Bush family who was a father of President George H.W. Bush and paternal grandfather of George W. Bush. So, in 1940-something, he would have been an investment banker from Wall Street that probably could have gone and influenced the draft board or whoever he needed to influence to get his son a cushy job, blah, 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 blah. So where exactly was he in 1942? In 1931, he became a partner in Brown Brothers Harriman and Company. Hello, Harriman's. You ever heard of them? Which was created in 1931, an amalgamation of A. Harriman and Company with Brown Brothers, a merchant bank founded in Philadelphia in 1818. With Harriman Brothers, the company established in New York in 1927. He was an avid golfer and in 1935 was named head of the U.S. Golf Association. Yeah, he was on the board of directors from 1944 to 56. Prescott Bush was a member of the Yale Corporation, the principal governing body of Yale University. He was on the board of the directors of CBS. Yeah, so he became a major power in the Democratic Party. What? Yeah. So Prescott Bush. Listen to this. Interesting stuff. He was involved in the American Birth Control League as early as 1942. served as the treasurer of the first national campaign of Planned Parenthood in 1947. He was also an early supporter of the United Negro College Fund, serving as its chairman of the Connecticut branch in 1951. From 1947 to 50, he served as the Connecticut Republican, switching parties, that's right, Republican, finance chair. He was a Republican candidate for the United States Senate in 1950. A columnist in Boston said that Bush is becoming known as President Truman's Harry Hopkins. For those of you who remember, Harry Hopkins was FDR's right-hand man. I don't think Hopkins had any official title, did he? He was one of the architects of the New Deal, especially relief programs like the WPA, which he directed and built. Yeah, but his role as confidant of FDR's is what he's most famous for. So anyway, again, with that as your family pedigree, you don't need to go to World War II, son. The president's body is being removed as we speak. From the rotunda of the Capitol. The Bush family assembled out in front of the Capitol, the ceremonial. Casket bearers are doing their thing. Long week for the Bush family. Right, starts, yeah, I have to give a shout out to the artillery guys at the basic school. They were given 12 hours notice that they would be the firing detail in Houston. Got on a plane, got their trash, got on a plane, and the honors that you saw rendered at the airport in Houston were... were rendered by Marines from the basic school. How about that? Outside the Capitol, I would imagine that would be the old guard. Battery complete. As the president's casket comes down the steps of the Capitol. Pretty awesome, honestly. So just, I mean, an incredible life. Like I said, I mean, speaks incredibly well of him just as a young man. As an 18-year-old, you know, he knew what he wanted to do. And that was to go serve his country and then his experiences after that, you know, direct him to the service of his own country to get involved in politics. And so very interesting. I wanted to, it's interesting the things that you see written today. There was something written in the Washington Post that I wanted to bring to your attention. And, you know, interesting in all of this, right, the Army-Navy game is at the end of the week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Let me find it here in a second. It talked about how the country is longing for the civility of that is embodied by President Bush. So let me find this. And I find it... And I just find those articles, I don't know, hypocritical, because we all know the media is a huge part of it. I was talking yesterday about, you know, it's interesting that, you know, Bush's compromise, you know, I don't think, and I'll have to pull the string on this and do some my own research, but is that what got him defeated in the polls, or was Ross Perot more instrumental in doing that? So I have to finish footnoting that, or the combination of the two. But Ross Perot got almost 20% of the vote that year. He didn't win one state, but obviously 20% of the vote in a whole bunch of states seals his fate. So, so let me find the article in the Washington Post. Michael Flynn tops the list of Trump's worries. Just for a few days, let's be a nation. George H.W. Bush wanted us to be. Alan Simpson cried while running for civility, so he wouldn't cry while giving it. Now there's a story that says Alan Simpson cried while writing Bush's eulogy, so he wouldn't cry giving it. Maybe this is it. Bush's body is now inside of the hearse that will take him to the National Cathedral. George H.W. Bush called for us to be a kinder and gentler nation. Sadly, we are far from that ideal. Our politics have never been that kind and gentle, to be sure, even in Bush's day. Still, it has been unseemly to watch how some on both the right and left have pounced on Bush's passing as an opportunity to get in a dig at the current occupant at the Oval Office. Bush is not even buried yet, and already he's being used as a political club. No one would be appalled more by this than Bush himself. This week of mourning should be a time to hit the pause button on the politics of contempt. It should be a time instead to celebrate George H.W. Bush and educate a new generation about the world they inherit from America's last leader from the greatest generation. Like all presidents, Bush had his flaws. He made his share of mistakes. But he was also a consequential president whose single term in office profoundly shaped the world we inhabit today. Yes, Bush set an example of civility in office, and we should celebrate that too. But it's better for us to shine a light on his example than to use it as a tool in our current wars of incivility. Perhaps for a few days, We can be the America he wanted us to be. Perhaps we can spend just a few days without the partisan bickering, personal insults, and nonstop outrage and resist, and celebrate the grace, generosity, and gentleness of a good man. I don't think that's not the headline I saw. Although, but again, what nothing stops, right? Nothing stops the juggernaut that is American politics, and the unholy alliance. Now that American politicians know that you don't that you're assured of getting your message out, right? Because you have your party has its own television network. So that you don't have to worry about that anymore. And that's what, to me, the watershed event of George Bush's presidency is. Rush Limbaugh goes, his show goes national, I want to say, in 1988. And from that point, mainstream media is consistently, I would say, compromised. Conservatives know, and Newt Gingrich knew, a guy who never served. I will note that. And so Rush Limbaugh's conservative talk show is booming, and conservatives now know I can speak to my constituents through that medium. And so do I really need to compromise? Do I really need to worry about what mainstream media says? And now this was, I would say, a mainstream media like it's not today. Right? Today when we say mainstream media, we all assume that it's leftist-leaning, leftist-dominated media. I don't think in 1992 it necessarily appeared that way. So you had to respect it, left or right, what the media wrote around the country, because that was the way that it came to the American people. Well, with the advent of Rush Limbaugh, that changes. So I think he's a watershed president. And so to me, he's a very, very interesting guy. And I wish I could find this, the headline that I saw. But I can't, so screw it. All right, we'll get the program started. We'll check the news of the day as the president's body makes its way to the National Cemetery in Washington, D.C. for his state funeral. And then later on today, it'll go out to Joint Base Andrews. It'll be put on Air Force One for the trip to Houston and for the Bush Family Cemetery that will take place in Houston. I'm not sure tomorrow. So, anyway, good morning to you. Welcome to All Marine Radio on this Wednesday, the 5th of December. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. obviously, this, as it has been, is dedicated to the 41st President of the United States, United States Navy veteran, George Herbert Walker Bush, who will, whose funeral will begin shortly at the National Cathedral. Say who this is dedicated to, but again, all this and then what you hear after these just anointed second lieutenants sing the Marines hymn, All the spirit that's embodied in this is something that George Herbert Walker Bush lived, not only as a pilot in the United States Navy during World War II, but in the rest of his life, and certainly a life well lived.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Well, and check the weather, and then starting at the top of the hour, you'll hear a couple of interviews I did with Jack Riley, if you've never heard him. He's squad leader at in Vietnam at a battle called Gatlin's Corner, named after the company commander. I think it's the single most decorated, although I don't know this officially, I think it's the single most decorated action in Marine Corps history. A Medal of Honor, 4 Navy Crosses, 6 Silver Stars, and 3 Bronze Stars. So you'll hear that. And so I can watch the funeral. Currently in Quantico, Cool Bay in Northern Virginia, in the Washington, D.C. area where President Bush's funeral will take place. Currently cloudy and 36 degrees. In Camp Lejeune, it's mostly cloudy and 45. Granbury, Texas, sunny and 41. In 29 Palms, cloudy and 41. Camp Pendleton, clouds and 40 degrees. Okinawa, Japan, cloudy, dark, 74. In the Al Anbar province of Iraq, it is dark, cloudy, and 63. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is dark, cloudy, and 52. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is cloudy and 52 degrees. Looking for rain today in the forecast. 100% chance of rain, which you rarely see in California. And a high of 59. Tonight, 56 with rain. Tomorrow, thundershowers and 63. Rain in the forecast through Thursday night. So, how about that? 67 and sunny on Friday. We'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network. We'll check a few news headlines as we head to the top of the hour. And Jack Riley.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It is still Christmas. The president has arrived at the National Cathedral. President Trump.
Mr. President.
So let's go. We'll go through some headlines, real quick. Here's the VA's long, slow fix for the GI Bill cash crunch. This is to me astonishing, and it is quintessentially the VA. Recently, they said they were not going to be able to make whole veterans who were not paid their cost of living stipend. Right, and that's how veterans have been treated historically by the VA. Yeah, we're not doing it. What? Yeah, sorry, get over it. For student veterans using the post 9/11 GI Bill to pay for school, last week was riddled with chaos and confusion as the VA announced a new plan to implement portions of the forever GI Bill law after blowing through an August deadline now long past. Lawmakers called for action and investigations. VA officials appeared to say one thing, then the opposite. But amid all the pandemonium, there's been an overlooked silver lining. The reports of severe payment delays for thousands of student veterans expecting housing stipends this fall that they live on, they pay their rent with. Those planning to use the education benefits for the spring semester should get their money on time, even if those payments aren't yet 100% accurate. I mean, this whole thing is a joke. It's an absolute joke. And the way, it's like you look at the VA and like, really? You're going to handle our problems? Right? Didn't pay them the right amount, then said, yeah, we can't go back and audit everybody's payments. Oh, really? Then how are you going to make them whole? It's their right. They earned it. It was just watching this shit last week was amazing. Next story. Manasokay's extension of troop deployments on Mexican border. So they'll be there until January 31st. Another headline says that their deployment will be flexed as migrants are moving from Tijuana eastward. So that in the news as well. New CENTCOM head on Afghanistan mission. I don't know how long it will take. How about that? Candor. That's the truth. Okay? That's the truth. Another headline. Pentagon will send green card recruits to boot camp, halting a Trump policy from last year. The issue is what kind of security investigations you can do on recruits. So that went through the courts. The court said, sorry, you need to send them. If they've signed contracts, you need to send them. Another headline. More veterans are becoming obese. Are stressful military transitions to blame? Please. Please. Let's overthink this, right? You've grown up in a world where physical fitness is a requirement. The requirement goes away, and they slew back to what they were. Some people will be committed to physical fitness. Some won't. With the abundance of food everywhere. All right. Is it any shock that veterans are as fat as everyone else? But here's one story that is pretty amazing. It's also in the early bird. 1 in 4 troops have an opioid prescription in a given year. What? 25%? Okay, so what is that prescription? All right. Top 5 stories in early bird. We'll talk about that in a second. 1, U.S. reconfigures border troops in response to shifting caravans. The Trump administration is reconfiguring and slightly scaling back the deployment of U.S. troops and personnel at the border in response to the shifting position of migrants trying to cross into the United States, according to several Homeland Security and defense officials. So some being sent home, other being sent to bolster other parts of the border as their deployment gets extended through the end of January. Number 2 story, faulty bomb elevators make for rough going in aircraft carrier deal. The new head of the Armed Services Panel, says he's leery of backing the Pentagon's plan to buy 2 aircraft carriers in 1 contract so long as contractor Huntington Ingalls Industry, who's been making aircraft carriers forever, is struggling to fix elevators needed to lift bombs below deck. How do you screw that up? I'm not exactly sure. Anyway, so that's in the news. Number 3, the U.S. has taken the first step to leave the Arms Control Treaty. What happens next? On Tuesday, the United States formally accused Russia of violating a major arms control treaty, taking the first step to leaving the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which could lead to the eventual placement of ground-based cruise missiles in Europe. So again, the object of this is, depending on what you read, is the fact that China needs to be brought into a comprehensive arms control deal. Number 4, new CENTCOM head on Afghanistan mission. I don't know how long it will take. So that is a Marine, 3-star, Kenneth McKenzie, if I'm not mistaken. What we're doing is preventing the homeland from being attacked, Lieutenant General Kenneth McKenzie, Jr., the nominee to lead CENTCOM in a hearing before the Senate Armed Service Committee said. That's the clear, tangible effort we can honor fallen troops for. His comments come on the heels of increasing questions from civilian leaders about the ongoing mission overseas, which topped $45 billion in costs and claimed 14 American lives this year alone. So, again, the challenge for the Department of Defense is to bring that $45 billion number down and to bring that 14 KIA number down as well. And, again, that number's ballooned here with 4 Americans killed in the last week. So not good. That certainly wasn't good. But again, it is what it is. It's an insurgency, and there's 2 things going on there. One is denying ISIS and Al Qaeda a place to launch. Actually, there's 3 things. One is a strategic presence in the region that we have in Afghanistan. 2 is keeping ISIS and Al Qaeda from growing their presence there. And 3 is supporting the government of Afghanistan in their fight against the Taliban that will hopefully see a peaceful settlement at some point. As the Secretary of Defense said earlier this week, right, 40 years of war seems to be enough. Maybe a political solution is appropriate. This story, again, we'll check out the footnotes. But nearly 1 in 4 active duty service members has at least 1 prescription for an opioid at some point in 2017, according to the Defense Department. There's a lot of variation between the services in terms of percentage of active duty members who receive opioid prescriptions. Although the Marine Corps numbers are slightly lower, said Zachary J. Peters, researchers at the Defense Health Agency's Psychological Center for Excellence, in a presentation at an annual meeting of the Society of Federal Health Professionals, overall there's overwhelming consistencies between the services. Also, 1 in 4 retirees has an opioid prescription. One doesn't necessarily equate prescriptions to addiction, Among active duty troops, the prevalence of these diagnoses with opioid use disorder has decreased from 2000 in 2011 to fewer than 700 in 2016, about a 0.04% of the active duty population. About 500 retirees in the military health system are identified as having opioid use disorder. It's still, though, when you look at it, that's still a lot of prescriptions for an opioid. I'm not sure that's a good thing. All right. What you're going to hear now is you're going to hear Jack Riley as we pause to honor President Bush and his funeral, which is commencing now. So on this Wednesday when he is honored, have a great day. If you're going to stay and listen to Jack Riley, it's an awesome interview and one of my favorites. The Battle of Gitlin's Corner, you'll meet him, and there's almost 3 hours of that interview, which is awesome. And then after that, there's another couple hours of him talking about the aftermath of Vietnam, which is just as good. So on this Tuesday, have a great day. And again, I think we should, on this day when the nation concludes its, salute to the president, we should conclude with this. So fair winds and following seas to Lieutenant J.G. George Herbert Walker Bush, a great American veteran, a great American leader, and the 41st President of the United States. Have a great day.